Today, 99% of the population is asking for a new way of life because it's clear that the old systems don't work anymore. We want new systems that provide abundance for all of humanity to thrive instead of just a select few. Imagine if everyone thought the same thing for 1 minute. According to physics, it takes less than 1% of any population focused upon the same intention to spark a widespread change in consciousness around that intention. We are all connected, which is why every thought we think and every emotion we feel has a changing effect on everyone else. Indigo Minute is a world experiment that uses the power of positive unified thought to create real change in our world. All it takes is 1 minute a day to add your focused positive thoughts to the snowball effect of all our positive thoughts in attracting the changes we want now. Join us in imagining heaven on earth and just watch the changes that follow. Will you take the Indigo Minute challenge?
At 333, imagine world peace and abundance for all for 1 minute.
First, how are you doing?
I'm awesome.
Perfect. Can you just introduce yourself and just talk about the current work you're doing now?
Yeah, my name is Dave Kalstein. I am a Hollywood writer-producer. I work on a show called NCIS Los Angeles, which is a CBS show starring LL Cool J and Chris O'Donnell. I'm also a martial artist who does work with Sayak Kali. Sayak is a Filipino martial art, and we do all sorts of things that are universal concepts, teaching people about mastery, not just physical, but also mental. So those are kind of my two focuses in life.
And what is the greatest challenge you have to overcome to get to where you're at now?
Well, it's funny because the greatest challenge is, first of all, understanding there is a goal. Like, what is your goal? Like, a lot of people say they want something, but they don't know what it is. Like, they want to write a script, but they don't know what the script is about. They start the first 10 pages, but then they lose focus. That's because they don't have a mission. You know, they don't have anywhere they're going. So I'd say first you got to figure out where you want to go. When you're a little kid, what are you dreaming about? I was fortunate in that I always liked to write stories, and my parents never really took that away from me. I took myself away from the mission. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I thought I was going to do all these other things. But by the time I was in my mid-20s, I kind of realized that my first job out of college was an assistant job at GQ magazine, right? Like, Devil Wears Prada, but for guys. It's the best job ever, right? But I realized it wasn't for me, and I had to take that chance. And the chance that I had to take was believing in the little Dave. Wow. So I had to get back in touch with that self and say, am I brave enough to do this? Because ultimately, you're the person that has to unlock that. So finding that mission is super important. And a lot of people, like, they work out a lot, but they got nowhere to go with it. You know, they're just doing the same thing every day over and over again. So where are you going?
So how did you muster up the courage to overcome that fear of taking that leap of faith into a whole new career direction?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at it. The first way is, if this doesn't work out, I'm screwed. And the other way I choose to look at it is, when this does work out, life will actually be what it's supposed to be.
Perfect.
And that's something that... people say it can't be taught, but I know it can be taught. I know you can train that. I know you can be trained to believe in yourself, because human beings, when we come out of the womb, we're all equal. So what kind of people do you surround yourself with? Do you surround yourself with, like, mastery level people, or people that want to be masters? Or are you just hanging out with a bunch of dudes, drinking beer, watching football?
Right.
I mean, so you have to make some hard choices, but surrounding yourself with people who believe in themselves is a great first step.
And being a master storyteller, what goes into telling a good story?
It's finding out what it is you want to say, and then realizing a story is like a fight, right? In a fight, you see two boxers or two fighters come out, and they look at each other, and they read each other. Like, am I going to be a counterpuncher, or am I going to be a puncher? And the story could be, like, do I want it to be a mystery, or do I want it to be a romantic comedy, or whatever, but what is the thing that touches you? And then it's on you as a storyteller to translate that concept into a language that people can understand. So with my work in NCIS LA, you know, it's a show that millions and millions of people watch it, right? 200 countries. So the stories I want to tell are still personal, but the lens through which I offer them to look at it is something that's very accessible. Because if people on this show cannot understand my story, I failed.
If
it's too complex, if it's too slow, they're used to a certain pace.
Right.
So I have to feed it to them pace that they need to understand and to learn. So, you know, that's very difficult, though. It's because you have to subvert yourself and think about who else is receiving the story. You know, because a lot of writers, they get so in their own head. They don't talk to people. They shut themselves in.
Yeah.
It's like the stereotype of the writer smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee late at night. You know, how much quicker could he get to his goal, which is finishing the project, if he just had people, and they don't have to be writers, just to say, hey, I've been thinking about this. But you have to get past self-consciousness. You have to get past insecurity. And you have to take chances.
Right. And, you know, being in Hollywood and part of the movie scene, I mean, TV scene, what is it that triggered you to become interested in biohacking?
It's interesting because a lot of people think that I found biohacking through Hollywood. Elite performance, high performance. I actually heard about biohacking from my martial arts instructors in Saad Khali. They're a very unique group. Everyone is really good at something. You know, like I started out in Muay Thai 10 years and I showed up and I was like, wow, I don't know anything. And then you go out to dinner and you realize they're also very smart. And one of them said to me one night, have you tried this bulletproof coffee? Butter coffee. So I checked it out and I reported back and I'm like, this stuff is actually pretty good. It works. And that began my journey. You know, it was the coffee. Then I learned about the biohacking movement, that people were taking their health into their own hands. And of course, I had to find a way to do that, you know, intelligently. Like, it's the same way. I'm not going to just bring out a blade and swing it around.
Right.
I need someone to guide me. And in that case, it would be doctors or the other SOC guys. Because, you know, I'd always say, because once again, it goes back to who do you surround yourself with.
Right.
And as a biohacker, I would never do something just in a room. Because if it was me just in a room, next thing you know, I've hacked myself into something that doesn't look like me anymore.
Right.
So it's always about, for me, biohacking was a way to bring something back to my community as being kind of like, what do they call it, N1? You know, like the first experimenter. Yeah. So that's kind of how I found out about it. And because a lot of it was about physically, it started out as physical. How can I train longer? How can I train harder? How can I be more focused? And then I realized that the physical only gets you so far. You know, I was already a pretty physical guy when I started martial arts. I was an athlete, this and that. But as you see, very few people are able to see perfection in any area of life. So since we're talking about martial arts, think about how many people have never seen the perfect kick thrown. You know, once you've seen perfection, you can try to replicate that. And so the biohacking thing took me down the physical path, but then it's like, wow, it's not just physical, it's mental too. So how do I create myself as a deadly person mentally?
Right.
And that is sort of what led me to neurofeedback, what led me to meditation, and something that I found, like a lot of mastery level people, not just martial artists, but actors I work with or other writers or artists, they are already at a mastery level mentally. So I had to almost catch up. So that's what biohacking helped me do too, because they have arrived at that conclusion through their own 40 years of experience, 20 years of experience. They've earned it through the repetitions they've burned.
Right.
So how do I achieve that in a shorter amount of time? Well, listen to their teaching, number one. Number two, pursue avenues that can make me better.
Right.
So that's what biohacking is to me.
Right. And you, as you started exploring biohacking, you stumbled upon 40 years of Zen.
Yeah.
So can you tell me what that is?
Yeah. I didn't stumble upon it. It's sort of Dave Asprey, you know, it's sort of the top rung of Dave Asprey's stuff. I mean, it's the most expensive one.
Right.
It's the one most shrouded in mystery. Basically, 40 Years of Zen is a technology of meditation where they hook you up to an EEG machine. And the guy who created it has analyzed the brainwaves of Zen masters or other master-level people. And he knows what those waves look like. And they're called alpha waves. And so what the training is you are hooked up to this machine and you're kind of in this meditative state. And every time your brainwaves mimic the master brainwaves, you hear these tones around you given by speakers in this dark room. So if you think about a regular person that meditates, they shut off their own mind. They may be doing it right, they may be doing it wrong. It's not like yoga where it can be like downward dog here.
Right.
There's no mirror for your brain.
Right.
So what the creator of 40 Years of Zen did was create a way for your brain to get feedback when it's in that perfect flow state.
True.
So, and you know, in 7 days, the brainwaves you produce are exactly the same as Zen masters. Now, that's not to say you are a Zen master.
Right.
Just because you feel that way, just because your brain is doing that same thing, doesn't mean you have the lessons of 40 years of Zen practice. Right. But you know what it feels like now.
So you have a platform to recall.
Yeah. And it's very intensive. You know, it's like 12, 15 hours a day for 7 days. And you come away with certain techniques where in the beginning it took you a long time to get in that state. But now it's like, I'm in that state right now. You know?
What was the intention going in for you?
You know, it was very value-based. I wanted to hack it. You know, I wanted the 12 IQ points. I wanted increased spatial intelligence. I wanted all the things. I wanted to be a Zen master. And then I got there and I realized that that is like hacking. What is hacking? Hacking, by definition, is a shortcut to getting a value. And whereas when you get there, you realize that it's more about the process. You have to work to get there because you'll never be in Zen all the time. But it's the journey and trying to get to it that is fulfilling. So the difference between, you know, hacking and trying to get value and the process is the process doesn't lead you to a value. The process is what mastery truly is. That is what mastery is. So, and I learned that when I was there the first time, because by the end I was like, wow, like I thought I was going to be a certain kind of person and I'm very different, but my understanding of the world is different. Like it's not, yes, you do get increased IQ. You know, you do get all those things. That's been scientifically quantified, but the difference in who I walked out as was being able to be self-aware, realizing that it's the process, realizing it's the training. And everybody trains. You train, you know, to prepare for this interview.
Right.
You know, a mother trains every day when she raises her kids. A martial artist trains, an actor trains. So that is the reward. The process is the reward. Mastery is not the reward.
So what was an experience, your most influential experience you had there while going through this intensive 7-day process?
Yeah, you know, they have a thing where they call it day 3 syndrome. And after day 3 usually is when people rebel. They're like, I want to leave. It's not working for me. My score is an alpha or low. Everything's quantified. And, you know, I had a moment. And it everyone's ego tells them different things.
Right.
And mine was, you are lying to yourself. Like, all the progress you think you've been making, you're a really smart storyteller. You've been just creating a story in your head
right.
and telling it to yourself. Which, by the way, like, what happens when someone sits down to write and they can't get past page 1? It's not because they can't do it. It's because the voice in their head is saying, you can't do it.
Right.
So becoming aware of that voice, which is a lot of what the training is about.
Being aware of being aware.
Yes, yes. Like, you know, it's just total self-awareness. And taking the emotion out of it. You know, when you remove yourself from the emotion, it's a lot easier to make decisions. And so that was really hard because my brain is very smart. Your brain tells you everything you need to hear. It knows you better than anyone else. So you cannot cut that ego off until you know what it sounds like and you have the tools to do it. And that's what they give you. So I had a moment where I had to not walk out the door, turn around and go back in there. You know? And everybody goes through it.
And how did that affect your identity now?
I think that, once again, it's process-based, but meaning every day I live it.
Right.
But one of the things, you know, in my work, so my job is this big TV show. And when I have written an episode, I produce the episode. So there's like 100 people on set, there's actors, there's people on the crew, there's other producers. And so how do I handle that engagement? Before, I think I might have been more making fear-based decisions.
Reactionary?
Yeah, reactionary. Whereas after, things slowed down for me. Like, I'd be in an interaction with an actor on set, and it may be heated. Like, he or she may not want to say the words I wrote. And so now it's no longer say my words, damn it. It's like, wow, there's 20 people watching this right now. This is in my head.
Right.
Other actors. God, there's a network executive over there.
Right.
I cannot have this conversation. It needs to be had, but this is not the right place to do it.
Right.
And this happens in a split second because it's in flow.
Right.
You know, there's no thought anymore. It just kind of happens. And so, got it. Let's do it. And then they set up to light it, and I take the actor aside, and I say, let's talk about that scene. And because I know how he or she would feel being put on the spot in front of all these people.
Right.
So things slow down. You know, it's almost like you are not making decisions consciously. The decisions are already being made. And a lot of the times, you realize that the decisions, like that situation is not difficult because of how you are now. Everyone wants to help you, you know, because they know that you've gotten more patient. They know you're not flipping out anymore. They know that you're interested in making connection. And you have a better understanding of like what people would call energy.
How does your training at 40 years of Zen affect you being in a flow state? Are you able to more consciously tap into those alpha waves?
Yeah. I think most people will experience flow state in some way, shape, or form. Like Michael Jordan experienced flow state. Musician experienced flow state. Like anybody that is like a battle rapper, they know what flow is. You know, I work with LL Cool J. That is a guy that knows how to flow.
Right.
And not necessarily, not just lyrically, but with energy. Right. So what 40 Years of Zen does is it lets you know when you're in that state. It was no coincidence to me that I realized when I'm in my highest alpha is what it feels like when I'm writing a script. Time goes away.
Right.
You know, the people say, oh, the characters started speaking to me.
Right.
I don't know where that came from, that line, that great line that everybody responded to. So you know what it is now, and you can tap into it. So the first step is being aware that you're in the state and realizing that you can create it whenever you want. So a lot of people can be in a flow state in the basketball game or, you know, when they're acting or rapping. The question is, when can you be in a flow state when it matters? How are you in a, can you get in a flow state with your children? Can you get in a flow state with your wife or kids? You know, and what the training in 40 Years of Zen enables you to do is kind of step back and be like, okay, beat. Yeah. All right, let's do this.
Yeah, you know? You could just tap right into it by being aware.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, you kind of have to experience it directly to understand what I'm saying.
And a lot of what we're talking about is awareness to be able to kind of control what it is you put your attention on. So how important is thought and feeling and attention?
In general or in the training?
In general.
I mean, those are all super important things.
Right.
Without thought, you know, we have nothing. Without emotion, life is empty. You know,
are you a believer that those are causes and will have specific effects in a scientific way?
Yeah, I think it can all be quantified. I mean, like when you watch, when I watch one of my instructors, like a Sayok Tuhan, flow with a weapon in his hand, I am like, whoa, like I will never be able to do that. And it's intimidating. But then you talk to him, and a master can say, this is how I did it. And I'm going to allow you to do that too, if you trust your training, even quicker than I was able to do it.
Right.
Because the truth, what is mastery? It's not about what you do. It's can you transfer to other people? So a big part of 40 Years of Zen for me, the reason why I'm doing this, why I'm sitting here now, is because it's not enough just to be Zen yourself. You know, that's almost like, that's not Zen. Zen or serenity or mastery is, I want to share this with people. I'm going to talk to people about this and let them know that that world exists and that it is quantifiable. I think anything that we call spiritual or emotion, all that stuff can be quantified. It's a matter of how clearly you are choosing to see. And the training allows you to kind of step back and see it more clearly.
Have you found that there's a greater impact when you brainstorm with others on specific intentions than just by yourself in a room?
Yeah, it changed. It's funny you asked that. It totally changed the way that I take notes and the way that I outline scripts and the way that I plan for projects. My being a writer, the way I used to do it was purely verbal, like writing down, scribbling in the notebook. And now it's become much more image-based. I draw pictures, like mind maps, because trying to quantify all these lines, and especially in a creative business, it's not enough. You'll never understand anyway, because you have to experience it. So. You're almost like jumping from concept to concept,
right,
as opposed to like spending 10 pages writing on one concept. And I just put it on a board and I can see this map. It's almost like a map to perfection. And the map won't always be perfect, but it is a pretty perfect way of getting there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Do you use it in a physical way, this map, or do you do it through like a computer? Are you doing it on a blackboard or something?
I mean, the one thing that I also realized through 4 years of Zen is, perfection or mastery is universal. So the templates that I might use in my PsyOx training, like my martial arts training, is the exact same template that I use when I write a script for CBS. You know, there are still targets. There are things I want to express. The targets are different, obviously, but the technology is the same. If it's true, if it's pure and perfect and mastery-based, I should be able to, everything I just told you, you should now be able to take and put into your world. If I broke it down for you, you know, if you said, Dave, I want to train with you and learn this stuff, you should be able to go off and do that. So the more time, if you separate what doesn't need to be separated, you're going to spend a lot of time spinning your wheels. You know, so it's almost about seeing the universals in everything and learning through that filter. So sometimes when I'm doing my martial arts, I'm having a block, right? And I realize that I got to think of it like it's a script. And it's just a piece of dialogue. And then I get that movement. Sometimes when I'm doing a script, I'm so based in thought, like you were talking about before, thought, I need the flow. I need to get away from the conscious thought. And so then I'll just get up. People think meditation is just sitting here like this.
Right.
That's not how we do it.
Right.
Meditation's a moving thing. For some people, it's Tai Chi. For a Sayok guy, it might be moving with a live blade. Not fast in the movies, like just slow. And you realize that's the alpha state. You know. And then things seem to fall into place after that. And I'll do that. I'll literally be at my desk typing a script. And I'll get up, and I'll unsheathe the blade and move around, and it'll take 10 seconds, and I'll just get it. I'll sit back down, boom. Because what is the blade? Really, it's a learning tool for us.
Right.
So I could not do all the things I do if I made them separate. Everything is one, you know? know, they're like, yes, it's oneness. Do you know what I mean? True. So if you ask like LL Cool J, for instance, if you ask him like, what's it like being a rapper and an actor, and I, he would say there's no difference. I'm the same person. My identities may change. Like, at work, they think of me different than my girlfriend thinks of me at home, and she thinks of me different than my SIAC brothers think of me, but it's the same energy, the same essence. So once you realize that, you can tap into everything.
And what's one quick, easy biohack that you personally like that people can do at home to tap into this flow? You said with the blade, but...
Yeah. I mean, that's just my particular application. You know, I wouldn't recommend people go off and do that unless they want to stay up for training. But, you know, one thing, a quick, really easy thing is mindfulness. Like, think about it. When does your meditation start? Does it start when you get up in the morning and sit down, or does it start before you open your eyes with your first conscious thought? Being mindful. How am I sitting in this chair? How are you sitting in this chair? Why did I wear what I'm wearing today? Why is my hair this way? It sounds laborious when you think about it, but if you were living a life where you were mindful of all those details, because people are powerful. You walk into a room, you shift the energy. I don't care who you are.
Right.
So when you consider how you affect people and everything you do and things you don't do affect people, it's easier to gain mastery over life. So it's a basic mindfulness, understanding your own power.
And just to wrap this up, is there anything else you'd want to mention that we haven't covered, just about your personal journey or things that you took away from biohacking?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, and I said this the other day in the panel, you have to confront the unknown. You know, like, you go to the booths out there, and there's a lot of like, hey, this will give you extra this, or this will give you extra that. Strap yourself to this, try that. I mean, there are no quick fixes.
What's your relationship to the unknown?
I like to live in the unknown and then quantify it. You know, every day is unknown. What is my formula to address it? So if you were just walking through every day and every day is equally unknown, it's like Groundhog Day, you know? But in SIAC, we have this thing, we call it 10,000 hands, right? Why am I not scared when I train? Because a lot of people paid the price in blood for that, you know? And in the SIAC tribe, people would say, you know, when you draw your blade, you don't draw it with one hand. 10,000 hands draw that blade with you.
Wow.
You know, and so you can build that into your life. Every day is a new hand that adds to your life, to your way of mastery. So eventually, though, you need other people's hands too.
Right.
So that is a pretty powerful thing for me. You know, and needing seeking out people, but realizing the people you seek out have better be pretty darn good if what you want to do is big.
Right.
You know.
Perfect. I'd love to end that on that note. Good. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
Imagine world peace and abundance for all for 1 minute.